You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
And happy Monday to you. We appreciate you being here with Ethan Westerman in our downtown Fayetteville studio. Ethan, not far removed from being off the practice field over at Razorback Stadium. We're less than 3 weeks away from Arkansas' season opening game against Arkansas Pine Bluff down at War Memorial. Rainy day here in Fayetteville, so the players were forced inside this morning. Ethan, what did you see?
Yeah, well, I mean, we were only in there for a little bit today. Like you said, the rain kind of pushed us in. Really kind of the main thing to note today was whenever they went through their fastball start, which I think I've said this on here before. It's just really the closest thing we'll get to seeing, you know, your normal 11 on 11 was kind of the shuffling of the offensive line, something that's happened since Patrick Kudus has missed time with a back issue. They've just continued to shuffle. And today, Amarian Harris went at left guard with the first team, which that was new. Carmona stayed left tackle. Addison Nichols was the center. Josh Braun, the right guard, and the right tackle was Keyshawn Blackstock. So everything else was the same, but they put Amarian Harris at left guard, which he's been more of a tackle. So
we haven't reached the point yet, but we will reach the point soon where the players, they don't want to be in the practice anymore. You know, they want to get into game week preparation. And like I said, we'll be there soon. They start on the 29th against UAPB. So, you know, you backtrack probably about 8 or 9 days. That's when they'll start their actual game week. They always have a little bit longer of a game week leading into that season opener, but they got to get to that point. Just kind of what are you looking for as they, you know, kind of conclude this? They've got another scrimmage on Thursday. I think they might have one more scrimmage before they get to their game week. Just kind of what are you looking for as you get to, you know, we're somewhere around the halfway point of what you would consider camp.
Yeah, I think this is the point of camp that you're just kind of looking for who's kind of shown stability, who has definitely locked up a spot. I mean, until you get to a game week, you don't really know. You can make all these assumptions about the team based on you've seen the one defense versus the one offense or the two offense versus the one defense. You can just try and make assumptions, but it's really hard until you actually get to the game week to see how it holds up in a real game. So from practice, I think what you're mainly looking for is who has shown that they are consistently being relied upon in like specific roles. I mean, I think that maybe some of the top things to keep an eye on before the season opener is, you know, along the defensive line, if they can show that there's some guys that they're really kind of trusting to be that second group to go on the field. That I feel like they have a really solid, honestly, first team with Eric Gregory, Campbell, Landon Jackson, Nico Davalier. That's been consistent, but there's some guys behind them that if you can see some guys maybe stay in a spot and not have to get shuffled, that's what stands out at this point is whenever guys seem to have found a role that they're not having to be shuffled around.
We have not talked to you since Sam Pittman spoke to reporters after the scrimmage last Thursday. Did talk with Christina a little bit about this on Friday, but I wanted to get your thoughts. Just what were your big takeaways from what he said about the scrimmage? It wasn't open. It wasn't something that we could watch, but you know, just listening to his words, what were you able to glean from him?
Yeah, it seems like they were pleased with, I think in any sort of scrimmage format, you're not pleased if the offense just dominates the day or the defense dominates the day, because then you just have questions about the other side of the ball. It stood out that he said that the offense really got on him early and that the defense kind of won the second half of the scrimmage. And he said the defense kind of won some of the situational stuff. Mm-hmm. So that stood out, that it seems like there were at least some positives on both sides of the ball. I remember last year, there were some days he came in there after they had scrimmaged and we don't ever watch these. And it sounded like one side of the ball just really kind of, it was their day. That wasn't the case last Thursday, according to Pittman. Other things that stood out, seems like Malachi Singleton has definitely taken the backup quarterback spot, which isn't necessarily surprising, but we did get that clarity from Sam Pittman saying like, yeah, he's the two. So KJ Jackson, the freshman, looks like he'll be the three. Other things that stood out was hearing about Isaiah Satania kind of being in that leadoff receiver spot now with Tyrone Broden and Andrew Armstrong missed that scrimmage. That's nothing long-term, but it was more precautionary, you know, with the season around, and Satania so got to kind of be the alpha receiver for practice. And he had a lot of big plays. So those are kind of the main things fresh off my mind that stood out, other than the laundry list of injuries that he gave us. We got the longest injury report, I think, of all time.
Yeah, it was long.
Yeah, I mean, the
thing, was 14, 15 players that were out for scrimmage?
14 missed scrimmage. I believe there's 15 who missed time that week. One of them wasn't an injury, but we got the 14 injuries kind of a list. And there was only one that seems like it might be kind of long-term, Luke Brown, the offensive lineman. I'm blanking on what his injury.
It's a knee.
It's his knee. Mm-hmm. So that, yeah, he had a surgery, I believe.
A scope. Cartilage.
Yeah, so that's the only one that they're like, this could take some time. The rest, Pittman seemed confident. Like, and there's some very notable guys that have been missing practice. Think Jaquindon Jackson, Andrew Armstrong, Tyrone Broden, Luke has a concussion. But none of these guys, according to Pittman, should be out for long. So, you know, maybe they'll get them all back by the second scrimmage.
About a third handful of those guys that were out last week, they're out due to concussion protocol. So, you know, you would expect them to maybe be able to scrimmage on Thursday. We'll see. It all kind of depends on, you know, when they go into protocol, whether or not they can do it. Like you said, Pittman said that he thought maybe only one injury was going to keep anybody out of that first game against UAPB. There's no reason to rush them right now. You know, it's like you see NFL preseason games right now, and you don't. I was watching Cowboys yesterday. CeeDee Lamb wasn't there for contract reasons. Dak Prescott's held out. Micah Parsons is held out. You don't rush your guys at this point in the run up to the season.
Not at all. And the first guy who kind of got put in concussion protocol was Anton Junkaj, mm-hmm. the Albany transfer. And they've taken their time with him. It's just like at this juncture of fall camp, like it's not worth risking somebody's long-term health status for something like that. Luke has, I will say, he was back today in a green jersey participating, like green means no contact. But he was out there, you know, doing stuff with his position group last week, even on like the day after, I think that the second day that he was not dressed out and stuff, he even walked around with the group and kind of walked through stuff. So it seems like he's really wanting to hurry up and get back out there. Jaquindon Jackson, he's back. He ran with the ones today. He looked on his first day really back. Last week, he looked a little bit hobbled still. His was an ankle sprain. And so he looked still a little rusty, but he looked better today. It just seems like it's a bunch of just kind of, for lack of a better term, these guys are just kind of dinged up. It's not real severe.
And again, I look at this through an NFL lens because the NFL is a much more open, you know, accessible team than college teams are, because most of the college scrimmages in the preseason are closed. The NFL, you can turn on TV and watch any of these exhibition games. But early, it's about figuring out more so who are your backups, mm-hmm. who's going to be your twos, who are you going to be your threes, who are going to be your special teams players in the NFL, who are you going to be your practice guys. I would be interested to get a college coach's perspective of, you know, is that what that first scrimmage is like for you? Are you looking more at backups? Is that what you're more concerned with at this time of the camp? And then maybe you're more interested in seeing what your ones can do that final tune up before the first game.
Yeah, I think that's probably pretty fair. If thinking about what Sam Pittman talked about last week after the scrimmage, he did spend a lot of time talking about some of those twos. Think Davion Dozier, the wide receiver, which I think we're going to get into wide receivers a little bit more here in a minute, but he was one of the guys that Sam Pittman talked about. He'd spent time talking about Malachi Singleton. I think that it seemed a little bit fresh on his mind, just remembering how some of those guys that might be next in line did. I think most teams in the SEC feel pretty good about their first unit going into, like, but the real contenders are mm-hmm. the teams that their second unit can beat your first.
And that's what we've said about Arkansas. Arkansas, if you put their first 22 against most other teams in the SEC, you'd feel decent about their chances. Not against a Georgia, not against an Alabama, maybe not even a Texas. But, you know, say like from, you know, the fourth, fifth best team somewhere in there down, you would think that they could maybe beat them. That's not the case. You know, you got to have backups, and especially, you know, late in the season, because there's always injuries. No team has ever gone through this sport without not having to deal with a lot of injuries. That's just how it is. It's how the season works. The teams that do the best are the ones who can have the injuries that last for 2 or 3 weeks at a time, as opposed to 8 to 10 weeks or season-ending injuries. Those are the teams that always have the best luck. You did mention receivers. We're going to get to that in just a minute. You wrote something before camp started, just kind of the questions that we need to get answered or we want to see answered during the preseason. As we're about at a halfway point of camp, I wonder what you think about what has been answered.
Yeah, there's one question that's definitely been answered. You know, kind of the four questions I posed were who would be Taylen Green's backup? That's been cleared up. It's Malachi Singleton. Mm-hmm. Sam Pittman made that pretty clear.
Why do you think it is him?
I think that they like his, honestly, I think he has kind of, for an underclassman, it seems a little bit of that composure that you need. Here's the deal. Whoever their backup quarterback was going to be an underclassman. Your options are Malachi Singleton, who's going to be a sophomore, KJ Jackson, a freshman, Blake Bota is redshirt freshman, something like that. It was going to be an underclassman. I think that maybe he has been just that year of being in college football. He hasn't played a snap though. So still, you know, a lot yet to be seen of what he can do in an actual game situation. But I think that he has that experience if he's been around a team, and it seems like his teammates like him. He's pretty good with I think he's pretty good on the run. Personally, I think he's shown some strides from last year. It's just you'll have to see the scrimmage probably revealed a lot more. It seems like he had a great scrimmage, and that's kind of what we want to see, is what he does against a defense in a live situation. But those would be some, I think just the experience is probably the top thing he has going for him. I mean, Malachi or Jacoby Criswell went out the door after spring practices because Malachi Singleton seems to have took his job in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
So clearly they've been impressed by Singleton. That was one question. Another one I had that I think has been at least semi-answered was who would replace Cam Little. Hard to replace a guy who's going to walk into a starting kicking job.
It's not so much you replace him as you just,
yeah,
you're the kicker, right?
Yeah. I don't think they can reasonably expect somebody to walk in and be another Cam Little.
It'd be very difficult.
Yeah, they just need someone who can step in and make a 40-yard field goal when they do.
And you think that's Shipley?
I think that we're down to Shipley and Ramsey. Shipley seems to have, for sure, the inside track. Sam mm-hmm. Pittman mentioned him, how proud he was of him. Like, he singled out Shipley the other day, and it kind of gave off the vibe of this might be who they're feeling the best about. But I think it's down to him and Ramsey. Vito Calvaruso, he is missing a little bit of time with some pulled groin muscle or something. And he was kind of lumped in the group before fall camp. Sam said three guys. I think it's probably down to two.
I was interested with Vito. You know, we all thought that he was coming back here to be the kickoff specialist because he had done that previously here. They said that he wasn't the guy and that had been determined in the spring.
Yeah, no, in the spring, it was him and Shipley, and they were about the same, honestly. Hmm. I think Shipley really struggled in the spring, maybe just the adjustment of, I know a lot of kicking is adapting to your surroundings, and he had a shaky spring. But Vito, I think, went to Wisconsin in the first place to try and be their place kicker,
mm-hmm.
and then that didn't work out. So I think that Vito definitely has the inside track to be their kickoff guy, but I think place kicking, you're down to Shipley and Ramsey, which Sam Pittman, I believe, said they made 7 of 8 field goals during the scrimmage. And Shipley made a game winner from 51 yards, which is kind of ironic because he made a 51-yard game winner on his last kick of last season for Hawaii.
Fire drill field goal, too.
Yeah, it was awesome, awesome broadcast mm-hmm. call. If anybody has a chance to go watch that, that was definitely one of the craziest plays I think I've seen.
Well, most people missed it because it happened at like 1:26 in the morning Central time. So I mean, it was a late game by Hawaii standards.
Yeah,
you had to be, you know, one of those football junkies sicko. Oh, yeah. to be watching
real
that.
Sicko for that one. But I think that, yeah, that's one of the questions. You got it down to two guys, I think, and I think it's fair to say Shipley has the front running track. I think Ramsey, though, I think they feel good about him though. So Another one of the questions was, would the offensive line that they've kind of overhauled be SEC ready? This one we won't get answered until a game.
No.
You won't get it answered. I think that more than anything, what you've learned from practices is, do they have depth there? And I think that they have depth from a perspective of they have some guys they can move around. It's just a matter of, do they feel good about them in those different spots? You know, I think they felt pretty good about that first unit in the spring. But without Kudus in the mix, they've been just having to try and tinker around. So maybe in the long run, this will be good for them. Some guys have gotten real experience in this in the fall camp.
But on the flip side, you want your offensive. That's the one position where you really have to have cohesion.
Yep.
And, you know, some experience playing together. Christina and I talked about this on Friday. Remember, they didn't have Brady Latham in preseason for a while last year. I think he had a concussion protocol, and then he was dealing with some injury. I can't remember which. I think I've got that right. But, you know, not that I think it may have made a huge difference early in the season, but, yeah, you wonder about would that group have maybe grown together a little bit more had they had him more for the preseason. So that's something with Kudus. I feel like they need to get him back at least a couple of weeks before the season. UAPB, I guess that's a little bit different story, but point being, they need to have him in there. It's not one of those things where you, like, you can plug him in on game week and expect the offensive line to be firing on all cylinders. Yeah. They need to have some time playing together in practice.
Yeah, definitely. It's like the pro is guys, I guess, have gotten snaps that maybe wouldn't have gotten snaps, but definitely the con is you want that continuity. And Kudus, without him, they don't really have it right now in practice. They've just been mixing and matching. But they did go a whole spring with that first unit, so maybe that can fall back on that. And then the last question, I'll be brief on this. How impactful would those post-spring portal additions be? I think there's really a group of two or three that have stood out off the top of my head. Joe Moore, the offensive lineman, Anthony Switzer, the defensive back, who's pretty versatile, Steven Dix, the linebacker, and Larry Worth, the linebacker. Those four are kind of the ones that stand out to me right now.
We were going to talk about receivers. We're going to run out of time to do that. We'll talk about that the next time you're in here. But just real quick, what are you seeing behind that front line of receivers, Armstrong, Broden? And I know they haven't been out there just a whole lot here recently as they get back from injuries. And Satania, what are you seeing behind them?
Yeah, that was kind of the main thing I wanted to talk about with the receivers is that group behind them. I think you feel good about Armstrong, Broden, Satania. You at least feel comfortable in that these guys are kind of your guys. Behind them, you got Isaac Tesla, CJ Brown, the freshman. He's like consistently been with the second team, worked his way with the first team some. So I expect them to roll with him this fall some. I think he's going to be one of those freshmen that see the field for sure. Davion Dozier is another guy in the mix. They've just kind of got like this group of like four or five guys, I'll throw Jaden Wilson in there, that it's kind of like, which of you are going to actually get to see the field? Because not all these guys are going to get a lot of snaps, but I think that probably two or three from that group, and I'd say Isaac Tesla, he started every game last year. He's a pretty safe bet for he's going to see the field a lot this year. They say they want to put him in the slot more. CJ Brown, I said, I think has a good shot to see the field some, and then Jaden Wilson. Those are kind of the guys I would look at to be next behind that first group.
Another scrimmage on Thursday. We'll have Ethan in here probably before that to talk to him again about what he's seeing over at practice. You can read all of his coverage over at wholehogsports.com. Latest breaking news on Razorback Sports. We think it's the most in-depth source on Razorback Sports. We're a little biased, of course. We work here, but I hope you'll come check us out at wholehogsports.com. Analysis, latest in recruiting. We're talking to Richard Davenport a little bit later in this show to get his thoughts on recruiting and unique stories on all the teams over on the U of A campus. You can subscribe today at wholehogsports.com. Ethan, we appreciate you being here.
Yeah, happy to be here.
All right, Anthony Christensen is going to be up next. We're going to talk a little bit about Razorback soccer. They had some scrimmages over the weekend. Also a little bit on Razorback Olympics.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are Design.
And we welcome you back. Appreciate you being here. Anthony Christensen's with us now. He's our, he's kind of our go-to guy on a lot of sports at wholehogsports.com. He's our basketball reporter. He's also our soccer reporter. You played a little bit of college soccer, right?
I did, yes. 2 years of illustrious junior college soccer in which I scored a grand total of two goals.
I've heard Colby Hale likes talking to you because you know how to talk the talk.
I hope so. I would like to think I know what I talk about when it comes to soccer. I guess that's up to the listener, but yeah, I would like to think so. Yeah,
we're gonna get more to Razorback soccer. They had a couple of exhibition games over the weekend against Kansas State and Seminole Junior College. Real quick, Anthony, hold up that magazine. If we'll tight shot on Anthony here, the Hogs Illustrated issue, our Olympic preview that we just had. The Olympics course wrapped up yesterday. The Razorbacks with a huge week over in Paris from a track and field perspective. I know the Olympics were 2 weeks, but track was just over the last week or so. Bob Holt wrote about this morning for our website. Just Razorbacks, former Razorbacks, or some of them are current Razorbacks too. Chris Bailey won gold over the weekend in the men's 1600 relay. Kaylin Brown won gold in the women's 1600 relay. She was not on the team that actually won the final race, but she had been on one of the prelim teams, so still get gold for that team. Of course, we talked last week about how she was on the 1600 mixed relay, won a silver medal with that, and was part of a world record time in that event. Rosé Stona, maybe one of the big upsets of the Olympics, at least in track and field, his gold medal in the discus with an Olympic record throw. Wayne Pinnock won silver for Jamaica in the long jump, the first time a Razorback has ever won a medal in the long jump. Of course, Mike Conley was a great triple jumper, won a couple of medals for him in 84 and 92, but Wayne Pinnock the first in the long jump. And then you think about the Razorbacks who are volunteer coaches. Ryan Krauser won gold in the shot put. Shamir Little won gold both in the women's 1600 relay. She was on that final team on Saturday, and she was on that mixed 1600 relay team along with Kaylin Brown that finished with a silver medal. And then you even go further than that. There are some professional athletes like a Tara Davis Woodall, who trained at Arkansas, who they won medals in Paris. Bob wrote that Team Arkansas, basically any of the athletes who are former Razorbacks or their coaches or they train here, which I guess the coaches would train here as well, they combined for 11 medals in Paris in track and field. He said that if Team Arkansas was its own country, only Team USA would have won more medals in track and field in Paris. A great week for Razorback track. We're hoping to talk to some of the track participants as we go forward on this show throughout this week. Also, maybe try to talk to some of the coaches about what this week meant for them from a just a, an overall perspective. Just the way they were able to promote their program this week in Paris. We think it was a great deal. I want to tell you about this Hogs Illustrated real quick. You can stay on top of all your Razorback sports with a digital subscription to the Hogs Illustrated app. Get the most complete Razorback coverage in one location, 20 plus issues. Have the Olympic preview. We've got a football preview that just came out right before that. We'll have a basketball preview. I know Anthony's working on that right now. Baseball preview in the winter. We've got a recruiting issue. Complete access to all of our content at wholehogsports.com. Monthly subscriptions begin at $17. You can go to hogsillustrated.com/subscribe right now or call 479-684-5509 to get your subscription to Hogs Illustrated. Anthony, let's talk about soccer. The Razorbacks beat Kansas State on Friday night up in the Little Apple 6-1, and then they come back home and they beat Seminole Junior College last night 9-0 at Razorback Field. It's their final tune-up. They're going to start the season on Thursday against John Brown over at Razorback Field. By the way, just found out Arkansas, we're going to get the preseason All-SEC and the coaches' picks for SEC. It'll be interesting to see how that goes. We think Arkansas is going to be favored. Maybe not favored, but they're going to be high up in the SEC poll in terms of trying to compete for another SEC title. They've won 4 of the last 5. You talked to Colby Hill a couple of times this weekend. What were his takeaways from the weekend, and what were your own?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that you take away from these games is that, you know, this team can score goals. Which isn't exactly, a surprising thing. This team's always kind of been able to score goals. But, I mean, yesterday they had, 8 different goal scorers on 9 goals. Against Kansas State, it was kind of the same, a lot of different goal scorers. I can't remember off the top of my head if it was a different goal scorer for each of the 6. But
I think they had 5 at K-State. I think yes. Somebody had 2.
That sounds, yeah. Ava Tankersley had 2 in that game. You're right. But, I mean, they've got, not only are they, able to score a lot of goals, but they're coming from different players as well, which is a nice tool to have when you're playing against, some of the defenses in the SEC. I know he hasn't been exactly thrilled with the defense to this point. He said you know, obviously they conceded first against both Kansas and Kansas State. Mm-hmm. And he kind of chalked that up to, you know, some defensive mistakes. He doesn't like the communication coming from the defense to the midfield and vice versa, which is kind of, I guess what he feels is kind of leading to some of these mistakes and whatnot, which is kind of hard to see when you're just kind of watching from up top. But whenever you're, you know, in the middle of a game, you can obviously, you know, tell there's, you know, this player is not telling me if, you know, I've got a player running in behind me or something like that. So the communication aspect of things is huge. And last night I asked him if he felt it was better, you know, against Seminole State as it was comparatively to what it was against Kansas State. And he said it, he did not think it was. So that'll be something to look for and see if they can, I guess, improve that, especially against John Brown before they go and play at Michigan State next week.
I feel like Colby Hale, and he is a defensive minded head coach. He's always going to tell you the defense needs to be better. It could be the Sweet 16 of the NCAA tournament and they could just have a shutout. And he's going to tell you that they need to be better on defense the next game.
Yeah, no, and I mean, the way they're set up in the 3-4-3, at least as of last night, you know, a 3-4-3 formation, you know, it allows, you know, a lot of players to get into the attack. You have those three center backs kind of hanging back. But it also, obviously, you know, it allows more players to get back. You want your, you know, your outside midfielders in that formation to kind of play as wing backs to a certain extent. So, I mean, there is a lot of communication that comes into that, which, you know, he obviously wants to see get better.
So, you know, we expected a blowout in the yes. game against Seminole. They are the number two team, or I guess they finished last year, the number two ranked team in junior college. The expectation would be the same, I think, against JBU on Thursday night. It's an NAIA team. I think there might have been some scheduling conflicts that made JBU fall onto the schedule. I think there might have been a team back out of the schedule or something. They beat JBU 6-1, I think, in the spring. Mm-hmm. It could be worse. I mean, think about it. And maybe they use Thursday night as a way to get a lot of play, almost like a glorified exhibition, a mm-hmm. way to get, you know, a lot of players in their game again. But I don't know. There's something different about a spring exhibition versus when the lights come on.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, like you mentioned, they'd already beaten JBU 6-1 in an exhibition. JBU is a good NAIA team. Don't get that.
Ranked 20th, you know, right? Yeah, in the preseason.
Ranked 20th in the NAIA preseason poll. So I mean, they're a good NAIA team. So don't get that, I guess, twisted if anybody's, you know, getting thinking we're disrespecting or anything like that. But I mean, it is a team that you would expect, you know, Arkansas to handle pretty easily, just because obviously the quality at the top of Division I and the top of NAIA is a stark contrast, right? And I think, like you mentioned, it is kind of, you know, maybe in some ways a glorified exhibition, which I think when you have, I guess, some of these things that Colby Hale wants to improve upon, especially when their next game is on the road at Michigan State, which is, I believe, ranked 13th in the preseason United Coaches Poll. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, having another, you know, rehearsal, so to say, would be, you know, a good thing to have when you're in that position.
As a soccer player, do you want to play frequently or you know, because like when they play JBU on Thursday night, they've got another week before they go to Michigan State, and there'll be a travel day, I think, in between there. Sometimes they travel the day of with soccer, so I'm not quite sure how that's going to work. Do you want to keep playing, or is the rest nice, especially this early when you haven't played a lot of games?
It kind of depends. I hope they get a travel day to go to Michigan State, because East Lansing's not exactly close.
Well, they're charting a flight. I mean,
yeah,
I like they're busing.
But I mean, it kind of depends. I think early on, I think you do want to be playing, don't get me wrong, the rest is nice when you're, you know, kind of constantly in the grind of things. But especially, I think early on, I would always kind of prefer to have, you know, a game in between, especially if you're playing against a team you're expected to beat, and then going up against a team that is, you know, right around your level. I would probably prefer to have a game like on that Sunday, just to, you know, keep the legs loose and everything along those lines. But The rest isn't necessarily a bad thing, that's for sure.
You can read all of Anthony's soccer coverage at wholehogsports.com. If you go to the top of the page, you'll see a drop down that says more sports. You'll see soccer right under that, and you can read all of his coverage there. Just a little under a minute, Anthony, real quick. Just one takeaway from the weekend, one big takeaway. What was it?
I think it's the attack. I mean, like we mentioned earlier, I mean, they've got players who can score from all over the field, multiple players who can hurt you in a lot of different ways. I mean, they're excellent in the air, as we've mentioned in the past. You know, they've been looking good when they're getting outside, out wide, and getting crosses into the box. They've got players who can crash in on the goal. And the off-ball movement in the attack and everything along those lines has been something that Colby Hale wants to see improved. But, you know, I've kind of seen it kind of get better from the games that I've been able to see. So I think the attack is the big thing that stands out early on, especially when they're, you know, in front of goal, getting on the end of crosses.
Hope you'll come to our website and read all of Anthony's soccer coverage again. Preseason SEC poll comes out tomorrow. Richard Davenport of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette's up next to talk about recruiting.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over 4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King. We are Soapbox. We are ShopCart. We are design.
And welcome back. We'll get to Richard Davenport of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette here in just a moment. First, we want to tell you that our podcast is brought to you in part by Bentonville Glass, committed, professional, and versatile since 1971. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass. You can come by and see them at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. All of your glass market needs, the highest quality products, Bentonville Glass. We appreciate them serving as a sponsor here on our podcast. Richard Davenport of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette is with us now, well rested, with the high arching ceilings in the background. Richard, how you doing?
Doing well.
You had
well week, rested.
You had the week off.
High arching, in the background.
you had the week off last week because it was a busy recruiting week the week before.
Yeah. Arkansas, as far as football, had several commitments and 4 in 1 day, which is kind of unusual. I think Coach Bielema had 5 in 1 day. I think that's the most in 1 day. So, but to have 4 back to back, really, it happened in about a 5 or 6 hour period is quite unusual. But it was well organized that way. Each kid got their own time and to announce, and then at the end of the day, they had 4.
Weren't there back to back weekends with a couple of big, you know, recruiting type cookouts where the players came?
Yeah, July the 27th was the cookout, and that was that there was like 50 guys, more than 50 guys. That were there that weekend on Saturday. It was about a 5 or 6 hour event, and it was more of a fun event. Yeah, they got to, you know, do a little bit of touring of the facility, but it was more of a they played games and they try to make it, you know, knowing that the kids are about to start camp and they're about to start camp, they try to kind of make it more of a fun event than more of a recruiting event. And most of the guys that visited before, even though there were some first timers that visited, and two of them were part of the two of the 4 that committed. So just recently, right before I went on vacation, but that's been a kind of a time when coaches throughout the country, you always have that one last recruiting event before fall camp starts. And And it's usually been pretty productive, not only for Arkansas, but other schools, obviously, as far as commitments. And obviously, it played well for them. And that same day, July the 27th, I was down in the Jackson, Mississippi area when Reginald Vaughn committed to Arkansas. That was a huge get. I know we're talking about the 4 now, but Reginald Vaughn's a 4-star defensive lineman out of the area that Mississippi and Mississippi State wanted. It's kind of unusual for Arkansas to go into Mississippi and get somebody that has offers from both of those schools. And you got to give Coach Deke Adams a lot of credit. Kelvin Green is quality control analyst, a lot of credit. They did a great job of, recruiting Reginald and his mom. His mom was totally sold on Arkansas, but I think that's going to possibly open up some doors for Arkansas going forward, because that's a high profile athlete in Mississippi choosing Arkansas. And I think that kind of gets the attention of other top quality athletes that are coming up, and that may persuade them to take a closer look at Arkansas.
Vaughn's of Hartfield Academy in the Jackson area, ranked top 40 at his position by 24/7 Sports. And he's got a great story, right, Richard?
Yeah, man, he lost his father last October to a heart attack. And obviously his mom lost her husband. I just can't imagine being a person, a young man, 16, 17 years old, and losing a parent at that age, and how they've obviously had their struggles, I'm sure, but they honored him at the commitment ceremony. Had a picture of his dad to the left of the table where his mom and younger brother were when he made that announcement for Arkansas. But I'll just say this. I mean, I think he's one of the best kids I've talked to since doing this. I mean, he's definitely up there. Just an outstanding young man, and I say that not only just by our communication, but everybody at that school was just he had probably over 200 people at his ceremony, and everybody there just absolutely loves Reginald and the type of young man he is. And I think that speaks volumes of obviously how his dad and his mom raised him, but high quality young man.
Richard, I wanted to ask you about in-state recruiting in 25. There have been some high-profile guys who have committed to other schools, some after they've been committed to Arkansas, like Akarius Kern was committed to Arkansas at one point. I think Marcus Wimberly was as well. They're both committed elsewhere, LSU and Oklahoma. Number one, how good is this 2025 class? Because it seems like, I mean, in addition to those two, you've got Arkansas commits, you've got another OU commit in there, you've got a Notre Dame commit, a K-State commit. So how good is this class relative to maybe some of the past ones in Arkansas? And on some of these that the Razorbacks have lost out on for the time being, do you think there's any chance they can get back in with them before the early signing period?
Yeah, I think it's definitely one of the better classes. You were talking about Karius Kern. I think he is as good of a prospect that's come out of Arkansas. I know he's a consensus four-star, but the guy to me is a five-star prospect. I think he's one of the best prospects to come out of Arkansas in quite some time. I think if he does what he's supposed to do, keeps a good attitude and works hard, I think there's a very strong possibility you see him playing on Sundays. He's that good. This is a really good class. I mean, he's the number one guy in my opinion, and I don't think things are done there as far as his recruitment. But this class overall would probably in 2022 that was considered a really good class and had more than 10 guys that had offers from Arkansas, and I think this class is probably up there, especially with him and Marion Robinson. Robinson is also, I mean, obviously he committed to Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. Arkansas will continue to recruit him too. Those two guys, I think, stand out just from a national perspective. And I do think that Grayson Wilson is vastly underrated, even though he's consistent. He's a four-star by two recruiting services. Mm-hmm. I mean, everywhere he's gone, as far as camps and stuff, he's been the MVP of three particular camps who had quarterbacks from all over the country, some of the top quarterbacks, and he really impressed. But overall good class. And yeah, I don't think it's all done with Robinson and Kern.
Wilson is, I think he's a top 300 by ESPN, transferring to Conway from Central Arkansas Christian. How much do you think that can help him in his growth? Because he'll be playing better competition at Conway, or at least you would think he would be playing more players who are going to be playing college football.
Yeah, and I think that plays into it, and also just a different environment shows that he, you know, if he's successful there, shows that he's able to adjust to a different environment, different caliber of competition. It's kind of like going to college. You're making an adjustment, and he's making an adjustment at Conway. There's no doubt, because also he's working out with, you know, the receivers at Conway were, you know, he was so used to the guys at CAC. Now he's having to get used to them and throw and try to get reps with them and get some consistency. And I think that's one of the things that you're going to face when you go to college. But I think it could definitely help him. How much? I'm not going to say it's going to be tremendously amount of a difference. I think there will be a difference, but I just think that his talent level and his skill set would be able to adjust just about any level of competition in high school football.
I think I've got this right. I think he committed to Arkansas when Enos was the offensive coordinator, and then obviously he's, you know, been allowed to stay committed after the change to Bobby Petrino. What have you heard about what Petrino thinks about him?
Oh, believe me, Bobby Petrino is a Grayson Wilson fan. they're not recruiting another 25 quarterback. I can assure you of that. They're very, 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 very pleased with Grayson. And he's 6'3", about 205. Could potentially maybe grow a little bit more, but he's a dual threat guy who has an outstanding throwing motion. When he throws the ball, it looks nice. It's mm-hmm. like a top tier quarterback. You go, wow, that guy, you know, guy's a little different. And I think that's mm-hmm. the case with Grayson. But he is a true dual threat guy. Sometimes you hear a dual threat, and then you watch film, and it doesn't necessarily add up. But with him, he's got the athleticism and speed to make things happen with his legs. He's an outstanding basketball player, outstanding baseball player, just an all-around very, very good athlete.
This probably tells you something about what Petrino thinks about him. I think Petrino was hired on like a Tuesday in November, and on that Saturday was a 7A state championship game in Little Rock, and I was down there, stayed the night in a hotel before, and I went down to the lobby the next morning, and Petrino was in the lobby. And I can't remember if it was the night before or that day he was going to see Grayson Wilson. So, you know, it had only been 3-4 days him on the job, and Wilson was already getting a visit from him. Richard, I wanted to switch gears real quick just to basketball. While you were out last week, Koa Pete, who's a 5-star guard from the Phoenix area, number 4 in the ESPN Top 100, I guess it was reported that he's going to take a visit to Arkansas in September, on September the 14th. He's also got visits lined up to Baylor, Arizona, and North Carolina. Of course, Arizona, his home state team. What are you hearing about him, and just – maybe how has the quality of recruit changed, if at all, since John Calipari came in, that Arkansas is attracting or getting on campus?
There's no doubt that Coach Musselman elevated the talent level far as what was recruited to Arkansas. Excuse me. Now Coach Calipari is taking that to another level too. Just about every prospect that he recruits is a 5-star prospect, and that's nothing unusual. That's basically what he's done his whole career. Nobody's done it better. Mm-hmm. And with his track record of putting guys in the league, let's face it, that's what everybody wants to do, is go to the league. And he's gonna be able to continue to get guys on campus, 5-star guys. And obviously, Pete is another 5-star. I mean, he's a consensus a top 10 prospect. ESPN has him number 4 in the country, but I don't see much of a slack off with Coach Cal from Kentucky to Arkansas. Obviously, Arkansas doesn't have the name as like a Kentucky, mm-hmm. but you get the kids on campus. I think that then they realize, well, this might even be better than Kentucky from a facility standpoint, because of the practice facility that Arkansas has, and the passion that Arkansas fans have for basketball. So I think he'll continue to recruit at a high level, and he's definitely elevated it from you know, maybe recruiting two or three, four stars in a class to maybe exclusively to five stars.
Well, you know, and one thing I think about Kentucky is before Calipari got there, whether it be the last years of Tubby Smith or the Billy Gillespie years, it wasn't like they were recruiting a high number of five stars to campus. They would get some, you know, big time prospects, but it really took Calipari getting in there. And that's when Kentucky kind of became Kentucky again, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, and I wrote about when Cal was announced, or when it looked like it was definitely going to happen. I wrote that out of his time at Kentucky, he had the number one or number two classes in the country recruiting wise. Out of all the years, just maybe he only missed like two or three years, and that's the. That he wasn't in the top two, and that was for various reasons, maybe because he signed a smaller class than normal. But no one's had the success that he's had, you know, at Kentucky or since he's been at Kentucky and now at Arkansas. Duke was the only other school that could kind of rival him, and But even Duke couldn't match the numbers that Coach Calipari was able to do, as far as number of guys going into the league, number of first-round draft picks, and number of signing classes in the top two.
Just real remarkable, the Kentucky run. It's like we see it, but I think as the years go on, it's going to be even more remarkable, some of those classes that he put together there, because I think it's going to show time is going to be very favorable to Calipari, and show that putting those types of classes together and then keeping them together, Richard, is very difficult.
No, I mean, you're right. I mean, going back to Muss elevated the program. There's no doubt about that. When Calipari, whenever he decides he wants to hang it up, Arkansas will be Arkansas was one of the better jobs in the country when Muss left. Arkansas will be elevated to even a higher level nationally, just because he coached at Arkansas, let's say 4, 5, 6 years. I don't know how long he's going to coach, but the name Arkansas over the next time span that Coach Pacal is going to be in Fayetteville, it's going to be up there with anybody in the country, and that's going to elevate the program from a national perspective, and when he decides to hang it up, it's going to be a very coveted job.
Richard, we'll leave it there. Appreciate you being with us, and glad to see you well rested.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
All right,
thanks, Matt.
Good week, Richard Davenport of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette and WholeHogSports.com. You can read all of his stories on our website. A couple of different places you can find it. Up at the top of the page, there's a recruiting tab. You can see it there, or if you scroll down to the bottom of the page, you can click on Richard's mugshot, and you'll see everything that he's written. We'll be back tomorrow with another podcast. We'll talk more Razorback football. Also got a couple of guests lined up for you throughout the rest of the week. We appreciate you being here. Hope you'll visit us at WholeHogSports.com. Until tomorrow, have a good day, everyone.